Read there. Now the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell. And great Babylon was remembered before God to give her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of His wrath. So we see then that her demise had already been foreshadowed. But now this vision that we're in magnifies the events as we behold the murderous harlot that rides upon this blasphemous beast. Remember back in verse 1? And in the description of her, and also in the next few verses there, the beast is described as being full of blasphemies. Any comments from anyone on that first verse? Okay, have you got your Bible open there, Doug? Go ahead and read that. We'll see what connection we have here. Okay. It mentions the word waters. There are many, many waters. Comments from anyone else? Excuse me, do you have something else, Doug? Okay. Anyone else have a comment on that first verse? The second verse really is tied right in with it because it continues in the same statement. The angel says, "Come, I will show you the judgment of the great harlot who sits on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed fornication, and inhabitants of the earth were made drunk with the wine of her fornication." This harlot was the world's capital city because she reigneth over the kings of the earth. If you look down in verse 18, the last verse of this chapter. Verse 18 says, "And the woman whom you saw is that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. And her evil influence corrupted kings and inhabitants of the earth." Of course, human beings naturally tend to follow the popular majority as it is seduced by the glitter of sin. So when Rome was in control, she enticed people to become drunk with the riches, the entertainment, the power, the self-centered gratification, the false religion in its rebellion against God. And during John's day, Rome was the foremost city which debauched others in several ways. Politically, socially, commercially, and yes, even religiously. At specific times from the late first century and reaching into the second and third centuries, Rome and its provincial officials enforced the imperial religion. Remember, we talked a good bit about emperor worship. And that's what this is referring to. This religious system that was put in, before the world is described back in chapter 13, verses 11 through 18, and we covered that pretty thoroughly when we was in chapter 13. Yes, indeed, Rome acted as a harlot. She caused the earthly inhabitants to commit spiritual fornication by worshiping the beast. And this beast, of course, was the emperor worship of the Roman Empire. Comments from anyone on the second verse tied in with the first? Really can't separate them. It's just one complete statement there. Any thoughts from anyone? Okay, let's continue on into verse 3 then. John says there in verse 3, "So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness. And I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, which was full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns." There's a very close connection here between the harlot and this beast. She's sitting upon the beast, which would indicate that she has the guiding control, you might say. And the beast, in turn, supports her and lift her up like a queen. In fact, verse 7 would indicate that. This description of the beast leaves no doubt that it is the same beast that we studied back in chapter 13, verses 1 through 8, which we refer to as being the political power of the Roman Empire. But let's notice some similarities between the description of the beast in each of these two chapters. Chapter 13 and 17 You might put your finger in one place so we can refer back and forth to these two chapters. In chapter 13 and in verse 1, this beast is said to come up out of where? Come up out of the sea. And in verse 8 of chapter 17, it says that the beast that you saw is not and will ascend out of the bottomless pit or the abyss, as some translation puts it. So the one mentioned in 13 comes up out of the sea, the other comes up out of the abyss. In verse 1 of chapter 13, the beast, as mentioned there, has seven heads and ten horns. We just notice here in verse 3 of chapter 17, this beast also has seven heads and ten horns, being exact. Then in verse 7 of chapter 13, we notice there that the beast out of the sea warred with the saints. And here in chapter 17, down in verse 14, makes war with the Lamb. Of course, the Lamb there being Christ and His followers. And then back in chapter 13, again in verse 3, the beast there is described as having the seven heads, but one of his head is wounded to death, but his head is healed. And then in verse 8 here of the 17th chapter, the beast there is described as being was, is not, yet is. So you see the similarities between those phrases there. Then back in chapter 13 again, in verse 3 again, all the world wondered at this beast out of the sea. And then here in verse 8 of the 17th chapter, it mentions there that the earth should wonder. So you see there's similarity there, and I believe it's clear. It seems clear to me that it's referring to the same beast in both of these chapters, 13 and 17. Any comments from anyone on that? Don't hesitate to disagree with me, because I don't claim to be an authority on any of this. Okay, let's go ahead into verse 4 then. Verse 4 says, the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and the filthiness of her fornication. This woman referred to as a harlot. She had had wealth and power. We can see in the way that she was dressed, because she was dressed in purple and scarlet and this glittering gold and jewels and pearls. Even to this day, though, the world is attracted by such things as wealth and social status, political power, things of this nature. And the harlot likewise appealed to all the people who regarded material things as having primary importance even then. But we can see then that how easy it would have been for people to fell in line and followed along with the Roman government as being represented here by this this harlot. Comments from anyone on that verse 4? Okay, let's look on into verse 5 then. Verse 5 says, and on her forehead a name was written. And I would think from the description given here, it was possibly could have possibly been on a band or something or other, but it would have been hard to put all this information just on her forehead here. But her forehead, a name was written, Mystery, Babylon the Great. So we see then that she was recognized as being Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. So this this very title that she wore on her forehead indicated her ungodliness, her impurity, and the filthiness that she used. She was a mystery, a wonder. She produced amazement in those that that saw her. They were amazed by what they saw when they looked at her. Of course, spiritual fornication did not originate with Rome. When we talk about spiritual fornication, just what are we talking about, really? Idolatry, okay. Unfaithfulness to God. If we're talking about a marriage relationship, unfaithfulness to your spouse would be fornication or adultery. And that's really what he's talking about here. This is spiritual fornication, though, that we're talking about here. But this spiritual fornication didn't originate with Rome, did it? Who did it originate with as far as God's people are concerned? Pardon me? Okay, children of Israel were in and out of idolatry, wasn't they, for over many, many, many years. She was referred to, though, as the mother city because she is a source of evil and abomination that corrupted the earth because of her conduct. She influenced other political and economic interests of her day, but she proudly wore that name. She wasn't ashamed of it. And you see a person today that's guilty of this in a physical sense, you don't see shame in their faces either, do you? They're not ashamed of what they do. Some of them, they're really proud of it. They brag about it from time to time. I've got a comment here from Robert H. Mounts. He says, in referring to Babylon here, he says the ancient Mesopotamian city of Babylon had become the political and religious capital of a world empire, renowned for its luxury and moral corruption. Above all, it was a great enemy of the people of God. For the early church, the city of Rome was a contemporary Babylon. The designation Babylon the Great, which is used throughout the book of Revelations, for example, in chapter 14, verse 8, 16, 9, 17, 5, chapter 18, three times, verse 2, 10, and 21. But this designation, Babylon the Great, goes back to Daniel 4:30 and emphasizes the Nebuchadnezzar-like self-importance of the rulers of Rome rather than the actual size or the true greatness of the city. It's a symbol for the spirit of godlessness, which in every age lures men away from the worship of the Creator. It's a final manifestation of secular humanism in its attempt to destroy the remaining vestiges of true religion. Society set free from God is its own worst enemy. And I think that's a good statement that he made there at the end of that quotation. Society set free from God is its own worst enemy, and it really its own destination, destruction. Comments, anyone on verse 5? Trevor? Okay. Very good point. That's true of other places too. And remember Tyre, back in he was in Ezekiel, wrote about the condition of the city of Tyre, how corrupt and all it was, and a lot of the nations in the world at that time. God let them continue though until they just got worse and worse and worse. Well, just like before the flood came, before he destroyed the world with the flood. He was long-suffering and he was patient. But his patience wears down and his long-suffering runs out. And it will again one day in the final judgment. Any comments from anyone else down through verse 5?
People back into their positions and get them to start
Okay. Okay, well, this our study is in the book of Revelation. Now, let's don't forget that this is not little things that are happening here. It's a vision that John's seeing, and things that are seen in visions are not always literal. In this case, very little of the book of Revelations. And if we try to make things literal, we'll lose track. Remember the question I said a while ago? Keep in mind, or ask yourself a question as you study Revelations. Ask yourself a question, what does this mean? What does these signs and symbols mean to the people that received this book of Revelation when John first wrote it? What does it mean to them? And it'll help you to understand it a whole lot better. Okay, did you have another point that you wanted to make from that, Harold? Yes, uh-huh. Oh, okay. Comments from anyone else on this thought? Okay, if not, let's look on into to verse 6 then. Verse 6 says, he said, I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I marveled with great amazement. John was filled with utter amazement, we might say then. This harlot cares nothing, of course, about God. She consistently opposes God's way. And she set herself against all who refused to take part in the ceremonies of the state religion or the emperor worship. She's drunken with the blood of the saints. What does this phrase mean? How could she be drunken with the blood of the saints? Okay. All right. Meaning then is that that she has slain many servants of God. That's what the meaning of that is when it says that she is drunken with the blood of the saints. She's intoxicated, we might say then, with their blood because of her shedding of their blood. And keep in mind now that this is symbolic. She's not actually a real woman. She's not actually killing people. She's not really the Roman king, Roman Empire, but rather it's symbolic, representing what they were doing to Christians. Of course, her obsession, speaking of her now, is referring to the symbol that represents the Roman Empire. Her obsession to put these saints to death was her reeling out of control. So much that even justice and soberness became completely extinct. There was no such thing as justice under this rule. John wondered, or he was astonished, he marveled with great admiration, some translations say, but amazement, I think, is a better word, as he pondered or thought about the activities of this great harlot, who was splendidly attired. She was decked out with precious jewels. She was drunk with the blood of the saints and was mounted up on this great monstrous beast. Comments, men, one on that verse 6. Okay, they were the ones that were being suffered. If they had the mark of the beast, she wouldn't bother them. Just like Satan today, if we're living in sin, he's not worried about us. He's not tempting us all the time because he's got us already if we're living in sin all the time. Okay, that's a good point. Going on into verse 7 now, this starts another thought. In fact, the angel now starts to give a a meaning, we might say, of the woman and the beast. Verse 7, we probably won't get far into this paragraph, but we don't want to waste any time. But let's look. Verse 7 says, "But the angel said to me, why did you marvel? I will tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which has the 7 heads and the 10 horns." Of course, the angel there is the same angel mentioned in verse 1. And he begins to explain to John what these signs represented. And then any comments down through verse 7? Verse 8 gets in a little bit deeper here. Verse 8 says, "The beast that you saw was and is not, and will ascend out of the bottomless pit and go to perdition. And those who dwell on the earth will marvel, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they see the beast that was and is not and yet is." The beast was embodied in world empires. And in John's day, it was embodied in the Roman Empire. I believe that, and I think it's indicated that is the case. The earth shall wander is mentioned in this verse. That is, the inhabitants were awed by the fact that each world empire was simply replaced by another in succession. Kingdoms of men came to power for a time. They were overthrown only to be followed by another, which also had come and gone. The continual process described as the beast that was and is not and is. This represents, as it were, kingdoms that would rise. They would fall away, then another kingdom would rise up and replace them. The beast is not actually out of existence, but he's only received a deadly wound. As we mentioned, one of his head had received a deadly wound, which is again healed. Satan's cause had revived once again in the power and might of the Roman Empire. Back in chapter 13 and verse 3, we read about that. He says there, "And I saw one of his heads as it had been mortally wounded, and his head wound was healed, and all the world marveled and followed the beast." So the beast then came out of the bottomless pit, a place that's mentioned at least 3 other times in Revelation that I have noticed, and is always the habitation of Satan and his agents. In chapter 9, first two verses, chapter 11, verse 7, and then in chapter 20, in the first 3 verses there, he's mentioned. Because of the kingdom of men yield to Satan's control, their destiny will also be perdition, as mentioned here. What does the word perdition mean? The word perdition is mentioned here in this word. It's used in this verse. It's also used down in verse 11. Look at verse 11. It says, "The beast that was and is not is himself also the 8th and of the 7 and is going to perdition." Destruction. Okay. Destruction, utter ruin or destruction, but it does not mean annihilation. Not completely just done away with in this period. I think our time is up. I see some people gathering out there. We'll pick up there in verse. Let's just pick up with verse 8 because we really hadn't covered that very good. And as far as I know, Jerry Curry will probably be teaching the class Sunday morning.